What's up, Internet? You're tuned into episode 91 of Nintendo Noise, a very, very special episode of Flip Screen Games' weekly Nintendo podcast. I'm your host, Pete and Bessie, joined, as always, by my partner in Nintendo-related crimes, Mr. Stephen Radford.
Hello, hello.
Steve, it is a banner episode today. Are you kidding me? Tears of the Kingdom! The sequel to Breath of the Wild is here. We have both played it for at least 20 to 30 hours, depending on which Switch you ask. I can't believe it's here. I can't believe it's finally happened.
No, me neither. It feels like we've been waiting for this game since 2017. You know, Breath of the Wild finished. We were all hungry for more. We got the DLC, which I never finished, apparently, because there's an Easter egg in the game, and definitely did not finish that DLC.
I didn't either.
but yeah, Tears of the Kingdom is finally here. I'm having a great time with it so far. I don't know about you.
Oh my god, yeah, man. This game feels special. You know, like I every year, right? There's those couple big games, right, that we get excited about. They have their moment, you know, in the sun. You look back on them fondly. Games like this, though, where it's like an event, a moment like this, they're rare. And I feel like Elden Ring was the last big moment game, and I didn't get into it, and I missed out on that, you know? So for me, I feel like it's been since, like, maybe Animal Crossing or something like that, where it's really like...
Oh, wow.
It's, you know what I mean? Where like everyone's talking about it and everyone's playing it and everybody has an opinion about it. And we're all having that moment that we had with Breath of the Wild back in 2017 of like the schoolyard rumor mill of like, have you been here? Have you seen this? Have you, you know, like,
oh, and they really kind of went in that this time because coordinates, and you could be like, go to the coordinate.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Find this cool thing. So they know what people were doing last time, which I think is nice.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, you're right. It's easier than ever to communicate those things, I guess, to other players now. And you know, like we have like our Nintendo Noise chat with all the hosts and everything, and like, you know, Chewy jumped in and is like, have you seen the hands yet? Have you seen this? Have you know, and there's these like little vague, you know, because you don't want to spoil anything for anybody. And, you know, you want everybody to have that fresh experience. But also everybody's so excited to share those water cooler moments and share their funniest deaths or the craziest builds they've made or whatever. Right. And yeah, it's infectious, man. I'm sure you can tell by listening how excited I am to be here and chat about it, you know?
Yeah, it's really cool. I think for me, the biggest surprise was how it was right at the beginning, right? Where I didn't think anything would capture that same feeling I got with Breath of the Wild, where you go out onto the Great Plateau for the first time and you see everything. But we got a similar moment in Tears of the Kingdom when you go outside for the first time, but it like took it to a whole other level that I was not expecting. And like you have just this moment where you're just like free falling in the sky for a moment, and then the logo appears on screen, and it's just like, wow, okay.
I don't know about you. I like when I booted the game up, I got goosebumps because the first time you turn it on, right, and it goes right to the thing for the new game, and it's just the Nintendo Presents, you know, and it's,
yeah,
like it's not even the logo. I was like, holy shit, like there's such this sense of like pomp and circumstance of like, yeah. Like, yeah, this is the sequel to Breath of the Wild. Get ready. And for me, like, I've not come down off that yet. You know, I keep having moments where, like, last night I was playing the game. I was sitting in my living room with my wife, and we're both playing it. And I was like, has it, like, hit you yet that we're playing this game? Because I keep having moments where I'm like, I can't believe that this game is real, and it's here, and we're playing it, and it's as good as it is, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. And it's I think one of those games, you're right, for me, where it's not only a moment where everyone's talking about it, but it's one of those moments where I can't stop thinking about it. And when I'm not playing it, I'm thinking about wanting to play it again. And Elden Ring for me was the last game that I had that. It was just like it was constantly on my mind. I was constantly looking to boot up Xbox, play out Elden Ring. with Tale of the Kingdom, I'm just like, oh, I really just want to go to that shrine over there that I've noticed now. Oh, and you want to go unlock this next tower. And I love that the towers are now all puzzles, right? That they're like each individual one seems to have a puzzle. There's like a couple that you can just walk in, but they're somewhere. It's just like, how the fuck do I open these doors? Why is this thing broken?
It feels like everything in the game is a puzzle, which is, I think, so interesting, right? Because it's like you make that point about the towers. That's true. But then it's even like a lot of the little side quests, right? Where, like, I don't know if you've encountered the guy who you need to help keep signs up at all.
Yep.
That's a puzzle, right? And then it's like when you're in the Sky Islands, like trying to get from island to island is a puzzle. Right. And it's like, okay, like, what tools do I have either in my arsenal or that they've provided for me on this island to try to get to the next one? Or, you know, and just it feels like every interaction of the game has puzzles baked into it. Cause even like with the fusing mechanic, right? Like, every time you attach a new thing or you discover a new item and you try combining them, that's like a puzzle, right? Cause it is like, what's this going to do? How is it going to work? I think it's going to work this way. Is it going to work that way? Trying to build machines that can actually drive things like that. That's all like, it's basically one big physics puzzle, you know?
Well, the Korok seeds, right? They're just sat on backpacks. The Koroks are just on backpacks. Those are all puzzles. And you've got to try and figure out how to get them to the next space in the most efficient way. Now, I built hovercraft on one I was doing earlier. And again, I was just like going across this swamp.
But even that, it's like, is it though? Because it's like, I think part of the fun too is being like banging your head against the wall. I saw this tweet from somebody that was like, I think it was Tim Geddes from Kind of Funny, who said like, Tears of the Kingdom, like, I'm a genius, I'm unstoppable, I'm brilliant. Tears of the Kingdom, I'm a moron, I'm a loser, I'm you know, fallible. Rinse and repeat every 10 minutes. And like,
literally,
that's the
game, I was like, right? I need a beeper sound to remind me that I can look up at the ceiling and go through the ceiling now. I feel like such a dumbass every time. I'm like, how the fuck do I get up from here now? Like, what am I doing? Because I'm still used to like, oh, I've got to climb everywhere, or I've got to, I've only got the same powers from Breath of the Wild, and I don't have this whole new set. And that's the one I always forget about. Because
I feel like that's a very common experience. I had that multiple people in my, I have like a friend group chat of people that are playing it, and we're chatting about it. And multiple people have been like, I don't like this power, or I don't use it enough, I don't get it. And then it's like, you start, once you get acclimated to it, right? Like, I just hit that point, I think, in my last two play sessions where I'm like, oh, okay. Like, this is how I should be using it. This is how I should be taking advantage of it and, you know, getting more mileage out of
it
now.
The game does a really good job at, I remember it vividly from Breath of the Wild, right? Because you got each skill individually and they would give you each skill at a shrine. And that was how you kind of acquired them in Breath of the Wild. And they did that on the Great Plateau so you could like get to grips with what they were. I think Tears of the Kingdom still does a fantastic job of acclimatizing you to what each of the skills are. Every single shrine I've gone to, I learn something new. I find a new piece of equipment to use in a new and interesting way. And I've done my first dungeon now, and you have to use every skill you have, and you have to use them in creative ways in order to complete the dungeons. And I love that. Like, it feels
I'm
like
so
a return
excited
to exactly what I wanted.
I haven't gotten to a dungeon yet. I've very much been my friend Em and I have been joking about it. Like, we're playing this game like crows, where it's just anytime I see something shiny, I'm just like, I'm gonna run over there and see what's happening, you know? And like, that's all I'm doing. I'm just darting all over the map, and I'm getting all the towers set up so I have more of the map filled out.
Yeah, I was trying to do some of the towers, but as you do the dungeons, they'll become easier to do because you will acquire new skills from doing those dungeons.
Yeah.
So they're worth doing.
I decided I'm going to go do the Rito. I wanted to get the Rito Village.
That's the one I did first, yeah.
I wanted to get that done before we sat down today. My plan last night was to do it, and then I got distracted, you know? Like, I was there, and I had my bandmates over, and we were recording something, and I was just, like, listening and giving opinions so I could play. And I was like, well, I don't want to do a story thing while here, so I'm just going to, like, explore and do shrines or whatever. And then I played for, I don't know, five more hours after they left, and it was midnight or 12, 1 in the morning. And I was like, Oh shoot, I never did the story.
How do you feel about like the story stuff in this? Because I feel like they've done a much better job at signposting. I feel like I know exactly where to go. I've got these four beacons on my map at all times, and I can aim towards them if I want to and find new things as I'm going. But there seems to be a lot more voice acting. There seems to be a lot more story, a lot more characters. We've got like a new screen with character profiles that gives me like a bit of a backstory into every single person, or every main character I meet. The creator of the tablet that I've got, for example. I'm not going to spoil anything, at least yet. But I feel like they've done a really great job with the story so far. From I'm absolutely more immersed in it than I ever was with the last one.
So before I answer that question, I'll touch on what you just said there. We're going to keep this conversation as spoiler light as we can. Maybe we'll get into some spoilery stuff on the back half, but our goal is to like not spoil anything, but also I think talking about this game in any capacity, you're potentially spoiling things because so much of the game is having those moments and those experiences. So if you want to go in completely fresh, we're going to do our absolute best to avoid spoiling anything that's like exciting or momentous or anything that like should be a reveal for you. But obviously, just by the nature that when we started the game, Steve ran in one direction and I probably ran in a different one, I'm sure we've seen different things and we're going to spoil stuff for each other. And so just go in with that mentality, right? Like we're going to go out of our way to not do anything like that. But if you need to go in totally, totally fresh, then you might want to play a little bit longer and you know, come back. But I'll say this, before we get into anything of that ilk, we'll give you a warning. So you should be safe to sit and gush with us for a bit, at the very least. To answer your question, yeah, I totally agree. I think the story is a lot more, it feels more central to the plot, right? Many of the side missions that I've encountered have tied back to the main story, right? Where like, I don't know if this is a thing that you've gotten to yet, but there's like the newspaper stuff that you can do. And like that ties to what's going on with Zelda, right? And, you know, the stuff that you can do in like the castle town, right? Like a lot of that has direct connection
to... Even the dude that's putting signs up, right? That's like, it's tied into the main story because it's this dude who's kind of sort of taken over and taken place, right?
Yeah. Right. And like that, I think the thing I love about the story so far, right? And I am not engaged with a ton of it, right? But I think it takes really good advantage of being a sequel. Like it has meaningfully been like, hey, like time has passed in this world since you were here. So any place you've been to on this map, when you go there, there is something new, right? Like, you know, this town got taken over by monsters, or this town, you know, something fell out of the sky and now there's all these people coming to look at it and that's changing the culture of the town. Or, you know, this town that you were in, there was a character you met 10 years ago that was a little kid and now they're an adult and they are the captain of the guard, right? And they remember you. Or, you know, now, you know, this town that used to be this tiny backwater place has been built up and now it's everyone's there, you know. Or like with the, you know, the events, right, of what happens that kicks everything off, that's led to all these like ecological changes. So like there's new flora and fauna that you wouldn't have seen before, right? And there's, you know, certain areas of the map maybe that were hot are not hot anymore, and the cold areas are colder, you know. It's just interesting to see all.
And even those events can like change over the period of the game, I will say, because like there's things you can do and it changes that area, for example. And like you've got those whole.
I've already experienced a couple things like
that. You've got like whole new areas underground as well as above ground to explore as well. Like there are three tiers on that map that you can explore, which was, I think a surprise for both Max and I when we spoke about it last week. That was one of the things from the reviews that I didn't expect, was the underground to be quite as expansive as it was. I've not been down there much. I've gone down there. I've done a couple of things down there that you can do, but I've not done a lot down there. It's something I want to go and explore a bit more. I've really spent most of my time just down on the ground, just exploring and finding out what's changed and what's different.
Yeah.
And like finding all the shrines again and doing all of those puzzles and doing what you've been doing with the like towers and stuff. And going and finding that my horses were still in the stables, which was really nice.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of what I've been doing, is just kind of getting a lay of the land right now, is like, you know, increasing my hearts, increasing my stamina wheel, making it easier to explore and take on some of those challenges. But also, like I said, I've kind of just been going and like letting the moment, like whatever's catching my attention, be the thing that I engage with. So like I've gotten to areas where I want to tell this story, but I don't. I kind of want to talk around it. Let me say this. Have you been to the area where pirates have attacked?
No.
Okay. Well, when you get there, I want you to think about it that I said this. I beat that with only 4 hearts and like no equipment because I just was like, I'm having so much fun trying to do this while I'm underpowered and just like be stealthy. And I played it for like probably 2-3 hours of fight you could do in like 10 minutes, yeah, you know, if you were strong enough.
I managed to cheese one of the big bosses. Like he was like, it was one of the giant bokoblins, right? And he was just stood there walking forwards and he couldn't reach me. And I was just like, bam, straight in the eye every single time with a different arrow. It was great. I was like,
yeah,
no way I would have taken him down if I didn't manage to cheese him.
I was like up on a perch, like sniping at him. And every time he threw a rock at me, I used recall so it would go back and hit him and knock him over.
Oh, that's so good. I never even thought to do that. That's amazing. Oh, dude.
You with the taluses, have you fought any of the battle taluses?
I've done one of them, yeah.
Use that next time. When they throw the big boulder at you, it makes that fight so much more manageable because every time you knock it back, they get tumbled, and then you can go get a couple free hits in.
Oh, that's so good. Awesome. No, I was climbing up on a hill, and then I would, like, jump down, and then, like, I would use something I guess you don't have yet in order to like, get there easier and whack it.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. Because I've been wondering what powers I'll get if I go.
They're really good. They're really good. And it seems like you have a choice on how you use them. They go in your inventory and you can pick. I think you can only pick one of them at a time. I'm not sure yet. I've only done one of the dungeons, but we'll find out.
Well, you know what? Before we get too much more in the weeds, let me pull in some of our questions here from the question block. We have a bunch of readers and listeners, write readers, like, what am I saying? A bunch of listeners and viewers write in with their thoughts and questions about Tears of the Kingdom. And I want to start off with this one from Asobi, one of our Patreon producers, who wrote in and said, what were your hopes for a Breath of the Wild follow-up? Did these hopes come true with Tears of the Kingdom?
I think I wanted it to not feel like a DLC, right? That was one of the things I think people were saying about it. Oh, it's just going to be a DLC. It's the same map. It's this and the other. I think they've clearly gone above and beyond there. I think the level of creativity, they really like have honed in on the physics side of things and realized that they can do so much with those puzzles, the crafting elements. I think for me, just that impact that I had at that opening section of the game where I said, when you go outside for the first time, I never thought any game would recreate what I experienced with Breath of the Wild for the first time when I got that. And it did. It managed that. I don't know if the game overall is going to have the same impact for me as it did back in 2017, just because that felt like a special moment. It was the first game of its kind. I was taking my Switch everywhere. I was playing it when I should have been playing working. I was like thinking about it all the time. I don't know if it's going to have the same level of impact for me.
I mean, the first few things you said about it were that you had all those exact same experiences and feelings.
Yeah,
so.
True. But I've already played it for 20 hours and I've got hardly anywhere in the game. So you're right. I don't know. The problem is I've got Diablo 4 on the horizon, and I'm very excited about Diablo 4. That for me, because Diablo is my favorite game franchise of all time.
I think what we need to do,
Steve, about it.
I was thinking about it after the flip screen show because we talked about Diablo and how it's coming. I think what we need to do is we need to create a regimen, right? I'll get Diablo 4. I'll commit to playing with you. And we set aside time to play Diablo 4. We advance it together and you finish Breath of the Wild. And then you can go like balls deep nerdy on Diablo 4 once you're done with Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
But you've already been playing it. We're already chipping away. We've already beat the campaign at least one time in that time.
Possibly. I can't see it. I can't see you wanting to play Diablo as much as I want to and also playing it at the same time so I'm available. We'll just
put it on the calendar. We'll put it on the calendar. We'll okay. stream it.
We'll see. Oh, there's no way I'll commit. There's absolutely no way I'm streaming my first play of that. I want to enjoy those cutscenes. I made I skipped those cutscenes during the beta so I could enjoy them when the game came out proper because I was like, I'm going to enjoy these once. And then after that, I don't care about
it. You got to drink it in. I'm with you. We'll figure it out. We're going to figure it out together, Steve. I think for me, my hope for it was that it wouldn't be a sophomore slump, right? Was that it wouldn't feel like... I think the kind of the reaction that Horizon Forbidden West had, where it's like, yeah, cool, it's more Horizon and it's better. The systems are better.
Yeah.
And like, if that's all you can say about it, it doesn't have the same level of impact and, you know, like the way that this game does. So I would say, my hope for it did come true because looking at this game, it scored as high or higher, right? On review metrics and everything like that. And that was really the test, right? Is like, can this game come out and recapture the magic? And I think it has. I think it definitely has. I do have that. Like you said, right? The whole taking it everywhere, all that stuff. I went to the park on Sunday with four of my friends and we sat on a blanket and we all played together, right? And like, I've been playing it basically nonstop since it came out. And, you know, it's been a long time, and don't get me wrong, I get obsessed with a lot of games, but it's been a long time since a game has had it with me like this, where I'm like, oh, I have 10 minutes. That's enough time to do a thing. You know?
Yeah, no, I get Boot that. Up. But I think that's also the kind of game, right? And you, I don't know about you, I just have it constantly open. I just put my Switch to sleep, so I'm ready and I can just go again.
Yeah, dog, yeah. You kidding me? The second we get off this conversation.
Yeah, so it's like, right, I can just go again. And like, it took me, I think, maybe 2-3 play sessions with the first dungeon I did because I could have done it in one sitting, but it made sense. Like, there was natural pause points, natural stopping points, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm about ready to take on the boss of that dungeon. I'm going to pause it and I'll come back to it.
You took me back to a thing I wanted to talk about with the story. That's another thing that I really like is, you know, the kind of bite size, the ability to chunk and like have good natural stopping points. Just last night, I got to one of the memories. Have you done those yet at all?
No.
So I'll talk around them. I won't spoil anything. The memories are one of the biggest improvements in this game. So I'm sure you've seen from the sky, there are those like crop circle type things that are like in designs. Those are how memories are conveyed in this game. So rather than you having to be like, let me go to this random spot on a map and take a picture of this nondescript thing to trigger this event, I bet you there are so many people who played the first game that never watched all of those cutscenes or any of them because they're not obvious. They're not easy to find.
I also found them pretty boring, to be honest. I didn't think they really added much.
And I like them. I think they're like cute and charming, but I also think having that opinion is like 0% surprising because they have very little to do with the actual story. Whereas this time around, right, you're talking about how you like the story more and you're more engaged in it. That's, I would highly implore you to go check out some of these memories.
Are they only about Link and Zelda, or are there memories about the other characters in the game? Because I'd love to know more about the backstories of other characters as well.
Well, some of the memories in the first game do that. So
yeah,
I don't know,
they
maybe,
do, but and the DLC specifically did. I don't know
got
about the main
it in
game.
A big way.
Yeah.
With this one, the only ones I've seen so far. This is hard to talk about. Okay. They have primarily been about Link and Zelda. They have been about other characters. What I will say is, I think that anyone who hasn't engaged with them yet, I would implore you to go check them out because they are very, very intimately connected to what's happening in the story now in a way that they weren't in the first game. Where, like, the first memory that I found, it answered a theory. Like, I had a theory, right, based on the intro of the game and everything that, and again, we won't talk about what that is, but you know what I'm talking about. There's the character who you meet who helps you out, and they talk about having a connection with Zelda, right? Like they've spoken with Zelda, they know Zelda. And as soon as that happened, I started formulating theories about how does that make sense? Like what, like what's going on here? What's going on? And the first memory that I found answered one of my questions,
okay,
and validated a theory that I had. And I was like, oh, so this is definitively what's happening then. So okay.
I'm going to go do some of these after, because I've, you know, I finished that dungeon. I was just going around doing towers. I think I'll probably shoot myself up in the sky from one of the towers and go look at some of those.
There's one near where you are that I would recommend doing first.
Okay.
It's a good one. It's a good one to kick it off. That's the one that I saw first.
I'm down by Kakariko Village now, so I'm probably.
Oh, okay. I thought you were up by the Ritos.
Yeah.
It's up in that area, and it's like a. It looks like an animal kind of shape. The facial like head features are similar to that character from the intro to the game that we were talking about. Okay. So look for that if you can. I think that's a good one to do first because it will. I think that one was the one that I was like, oh, these are important. Like these are actually significant, and some of the other ones have filled in blanks for me, but not as much as that one. So
I'm curious, what made you go up to Rito first? Because I went there too, and I don't know why. And I feel like maybe the game was pushing me there by design, it's pushing everyone there, and it's like subconsciously we're all going up to Rito first.
Because they tell you that.
I think Doc in the Discord did it first as well.
I think it is the game, like in the opening area, and then all of the maps surrounding the opening area, everybody mentions the Rito Village. Oh, it's cold up there, there's this thing going on, they have
then if you go down to like another area, they're like, oh yeah, Kakariko Village out to the east, it's in between two mountains, you can't miss
it. And that's the thing, I think the reason most people are going to the Rito Village is because the opening area is filled with people being like, go up that way. I didn't go there first. I actually went to Kakariko first, and I went down to the south and went in all in that area.
I guess that's where the pirates are then.
Yeah. And I decided now to double back and go do that first because I got the impression that the game was telling me this is the first one you should do. So go start there. Because I figure it'll be the easiest one to do. And I am in this dance now where I'm doing the side stuff because I'm just enjoying it, but I don't want to get so overpowered that I just like raffle stomp my way through the story stuff. So I'm like, I've done enough. Like I've got a stamina bar and a half, and I've got like a good amount of hearts now. I'm like, all right, like let me go do this first thing before I get too strong for it.
You know? Yeah, I'm focusing on stamina now. I did 2 hearts to begin with, and I didn't realize I was going to get a heart from a temp from the dungeon that I did. And so,
I didn't think about that.
So at the end, I was like, oh, I've got a heart. I really should focus on stamina now because I've got like 6 or 7 hearts. And I'm like, yeah, I should probably go and do some more.
Before I go do that temple tonight, I'm going to go cash in 2 more sets of.
Where have you been cashing those in? I've been doing it at the emergency shelter. It's like my go-to place that I go around.
I usually do it in Kakariko because their shrine is like right in the center of town, so it's like super easy to be like, I'm at the you know, the shrine that's right there and just glide right down to it. You don't have to like go through a lot of like
steps. Fair, yeah, like you do. I guess it's not too bad at the emergency shelter, and like I'll do some cooking, I'll pick up some arrows. I think that's one change I'm not a massive fan of, is how the arrows are handled in this game, and maybe that'll change as time progresses.
Yeah,
in that I've constantly got to keep going back up to select every single time. If I'm shooting fire arrows, I've got to keep going and put in a fire fruit on it.
I do wish that you could like make a stack of them or something.
Yeah, that's
and you
what
could
I want, and then I can have swap more of a between quick. Them. Yeah.
But I think for me, the trade-off is worth it because it's like you went from having like 3 kinds of arrows to having like 40, you know, like it's like there's so many that do different things. And I don't know how many you've experimented with, but like I use the key swings so that you can get the long shots. I've been using the eyeballs for the homing shots a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've done this. If you throw a pine cone into fire,
it explodes.
So, like, you can do that. If they're sitting around a fire, you can shoot a pine cone into it, and
you'll
blow everybody
get that
up.
On the Rito quest line, they like teach you that. That's one of the things they teach you, which is quite cool.
That's where I learned it. I was at the, there's like the the stable where that yes. guy teaches you how yeah, to yeah, do it, yeah. so you can actually get over there.
But I think the thing, like, I was experimenting with everything. So, like, I put ice on the end of like, stuff for fuse. But one point I did have was I put a bomb, a time bomb, on the end of a sword. And I whacked someone with it, not realizing what it would do. And it blew my sound.
That's awesome. So that actually takes me to a great question I want to bring in here from one of our... one of our listeners here, Andrew Valentine, over on the Discord, who said, what was your light bulb Tears of the Kingdom moment where you realized the possibilities of Ultra Hand? For me, it was on the Great Sky Island. I needed to climb an ice wall that was too large for my stamina level. I assumed there was an ability or upgrade I had missed, and then I realized I could just glue a load of logs together and climb up. Really basic example, but one that definitely conveyed the emphasis Tears of the Kingdom has on a personal approach to puzzle solving.
Oh, okay.
I think like kind of in that same vein, right? Of like whether it's puzzle solving, whether it's like weapon combinations, those have been the big. Because I think for like puzzles, it was more like me learning how to actually build a machine that worked and being like, oh, okay.
Some of them are like that, but some of the shrines are genuinely difficult. Like I've looked up a couple of solutions at this point. I'm not afraid to admit that I was stuck on the end of a shrine, and I'm like. And I was annoyed at myself afterwards. It was one of those like simple ones.
Yeah.
But there was a point in one of the shrines, and it's a rails one, and you're meant to build like a thing that goes on rails, and you're building like a roller coaster.
Yeah, I've done this one.
I could not figure it out. So to solve the second one, because there's three in that shrine, solve the second one. There's like five metal things. I made a big ramp, and I ran up the big ramp, and then I used my paraglider, and I just flew down to the next step.
That's what
and
I did too.
I was like, oh, so I don't actually have to like do the puzzle how they want me to do it. I don't have to do it on rails. I can just completely just bypass that if I want to and just fly
over.
I
feel like I've definitely cheesed at least one puzzle by using recall of like getting something and then like sticking it on a level, having it stop, having it come down, and then jumping on it and recalling. And like, mm-hmm. Maybe I'm supposed to do it that way. Who knows? But I think that's the thing is like having those moments where you're banging your head against a wall and then you're like, oh, I figured it out. Whatever. Like, was that right? Who cares? I did it. Right. And it's been really fun to be playing it. I'm mostly playing it docked. I've been jumping off in handheld as well, but. Like upstairs when I'm sitting with my wife in the living room, I'm usually on the dock and she's playing handheld. And it's been so funny to have her watch me do puzzles that she's already done and been like, you solved this in a totally different way than I did. Like we did not approach this problem in the same way at all.
Yeah. Like there's one shrine and it's sort of like floating in the air and there's like a big root that's coming down from it. And I was trying to figure out the best way of getting up there because I hadn't done the tower nearby at that point. And I was climbing up the route, climbing up the route normally. And then it started chucking it down. And so, of course, Link's useless when it's raining. And he, like, fell down and he couldn't climb up because it was soaking wet. But then I saw one of those rocks just, like, fall down nearby. So, of course, you go over, you, like, jump on it, you do recall, it shoots you back up into the air, and then you can just fly straight over to it. It's great.
Amazing. So I think, like, giving the aha moment, I think a lot of them for me were weapon combinations. It was realizing how useful the arrow fusions were. I think my favorite two moments were the first time I put a flame emitter on a shield, and I made a flamethrower shield. I don't know if you've done that yet.
Yeah, that one's cool. Yeah, I picked one of those up. Another enemy had one of those. Have you done the bouncy box as well, where you can like put it on the shield, and when you parry, it like flings them miles away? Yeah. It's so fun.
It's so good. Yeah, or like I remember the first time I took a door, like a piece of wood or like a door, and stuck it and made a fan. And when you swing it, they just get mm-hmm. blown over with a gust of wind. Like stuff like that is just so much fun. The other night, I had already like had my aha moment, but this was a new one for me. Was I got one of the rockets and I attached it to a shield, thinking that I would hold it up and it would shoot the rocket. And instead, I just lifted Link right up out of the ground, and like Revali's Gale style. I was like, oh, shit, I can make a jetpack with this? This is incredible. Like,
oh, that's so cool. And I haven't tried that yet. I always use the glider wings. I love those. Being able to, like, hover so much land just from the air.
Dude,
and then you just like skydive down. It's great.
Dude, I rode one of those. So, okay. I was in a tower, right? And I jumped up and I got to a sky island that was above the tower. So I'm like right above this tower. And on it, it had one of those gliders and it had two fans on it already. And then there was rockets. And I was like, perfect. Popped them on there, shot it. And I did the, you know, the overcharge one where you can use the cell and it gives you, it more, overcharges yeah. it and then it'll give you a full one. I waited until my battery was almost out, did that. So I got one full charge, then two more full charges. And I went so far, I made it to a second tower. And I went so far that the glider disappeared.
Yeah, like, yeah. I've had the gliders long, just they just away. Go. Yeah, they like start flashing green, and yeah. it's gonna
break. What's gonna happen? Is it gonna blow up? Like, what's happening? And then it just boop. Okay.
Yeah.
But I was close enough. I landed literally right next to another tower on another like little hill, and then just glide my way over to it with the with my what's it called, the
glider.
Yeah. Whatever. The glider.
Yeah. The paraglider.
Paraglider. That's the word I was looking for. I was like, I can't believe how far this went. I can't believe I made it to a whole other section of the map. I'm riding one of these things.
Yeah, it's genuinely so cool. I love all the creations you can do.
So that's here's another good one from AV Andrew Valentine wrote in with a bunch of good questions here. The next one was, what is the best, funniest / most violent weapon you've created with Fuse?
Oh, it's gotta be that flame.
The bomb is a good one. I think the flamethrower is definitely up there for me. That's one like I use a lot. It's so fun and it's so silly. There's also, if you take gems like rubies or sapphires and you put them on a sword, you can make a wand.
I absolutely refuse because they're so expensive. Like, and I want money.
You want the rubies?
Like, I can get 110 for a ruby. I'm like, there's no way I'm putting that on the end of anything. No way.
It's good, though. It's good. I go kill the wizards and take theirs.
I'd rather do that. But like, I think one of the things I had to learn pretty early on in the game is that there are hardly any good normal weapons in the game. And I know it tells you that, right? That they're all degraded and there are hardly any good weapons because of whatever the thing it is that happened, the event. And you have to fuse it. You absolutely have to. And like, I love the fact that you have to fuse it. And each weapon, there's some weapons for specific scenarios, right? Like if there's a wall you need to break down, well, you don't have your bombs anymore from Breath of the Wild.
You need a stone club.
You need a stone. Yeah, you need like a stone hammer or a stone club or something, and then you can whack the hell out of it. And I think for me, that was like such a cool moment when I realized that, oh, you can craft like different weapons for different scenarios, and it's not just like, oh, I can shove something on the end and now it's more powerful or it does something cool.
It makes the weapon types feel more important than they were in the last game. Like, I remember in the first game, I always kind of felt like I was just using whatever good weapons I had, whereas now I'm like intentionally being like, well, I need an axe.
Oh, yeah, what about those like walking trees? You try getting one of them without an axe.
Dude, I gotta okay. I was doing a side quest where I was collecting logs for somebody, and I was got in the scenario where I didn't have an axe. I had no blade. I had no bladed weapon. I only had clubs and spears.
Oh no.
And it starts raining and one of these trees attacks me, and I was like, I can't light it on fire. I can't do anything to this fucking guy. And I literally just had to run away because I could not fight him.
Yeah, like, incredible. I was like, oh, he's made a wood, I'll light him on fire. But then I was like, I've got an axe, and that chops trees down pretty quickly. So I just tried it, and I was like, bam, he's dead. Done.
Have you done the dumbass thing that I did the first time I built a boat, where if you try to activate, because you know you have to hit the devices to activate them, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you use an axe,
it'll break the tree.
Chop the wood right underneath
you. I was so annoyed.
The first time I did it, it was the dumbest fucking thing too, because I was trying to get back, and there was only like two trees in the area I was in, so I had to hike back up to a higher part of the mountain and get more trees. And then I came down and I accidentally dropped them down a well, and I was like, I had to go back up even higher and get more. So stupid.
That's so annoying.
Oh yeah. I have gotten so much pleasure out of that, out of the fusion, and like figuring out like what are cool new combos and what do they do and how can they, you know, how can you make something even better.
I wish it would store them, if you know what I mean. Like, there's a recipe book, but I can't. The recipe book is not as good as I thought it was going to be, right? I thought I was going to be able to click them and it was going to select all the things from my inventory and I could cook them.
It just reminds me.
And I'm just like, just fucking pick it all out for me so I don't have to keep doing that. And I wish there was something like that for fusion as well. Like, it would be like, oh, if you fuse this and this together, it will make this. And like, you can kind of get an idea and refresh your memory.
Some kind of catalog, I think, could be helpful. I feel like it's probably not that way because they want to encourage you to just experiment, you know?
Yeah, which is fair. But I think if there are some nice quality of life improvements like that. But that, yeah, I think the recipe book could have been improved. It's pointless at this point. I'm just like,
I think most of the quality of life stuff is really good. Like, the log is for conversations is something that my ADHD.
Oh, I didn't even realize that wasn't in there in the last game.
Yeah. Oh my God, such a game changer for me, because I have that problem so often where I'm like, I'm reading the thing and then I'm like, wait, what did you say? What was like, what?
Yeah,
say something different the next time you talk to them.
We're a household that always has subtitles on TV and movies.
Oh, yeah. So it's me like, too. I need to for
games as well.
And I mean, part of that is because audio mixing is bad in a lot of things, but also it's just like, yeah, like it really helps me pay attention to what's happening and like drink it in, you know, and not get distracted. Because especially in this game, like it'll be like I'm talking to somebody and then like, there's like a thing behind them that I'm like, oh, what's that shit? Like, you know, I'm like, oh, what did you say? You
know. Or I think like half the time it's voice acted and then it goes from a voice acted segment to a non-voice acted segment and then back to a voice acted segment pretty quickly. Like, it's not very consistent when it comes to the voice acting. Like,
there's so much dialogue. It's one of those things where it's like, we gotta get
and through. And I'm fine with it, right? This was the complaint I had for Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
They do it like, so well in Tears of the Kingdom. Grunt.
Yeah.
I just want the grunts. Just all I need. That's all I need in Pokemon, and I'll be a happy man.
The like emotive noises that people make in this game are just so funny. Like, they're so expressive. Like,
every time I go see Beedle, like even in the first game, like in Breath of the Wild, it was like he's so excited whenever I buy anything.
He's so jazzed. All right, I love the little, he's like, wow, like whenever you buy a whole stack of something.
He's so good.
He's like, oh my God, yes, I'm rolling in it. Oh, so good. Next question from Andrew is, what's the best, funniest / most violent method of Korok transport that you've tried?
I think the hovercraft was the most fun. I just shoved it on there and then got on the back of it and went across the swamp. I've not really engaged with them all that much. I've still got a bunch of seeds and I need to find Hestu again. I found him once and I've got to go find him.
I haven't found him the second time yet.
Like, go get some more shit. So for now, I'm just like, I can go back and do the Koroks later. I'm not that bothered about them.
I don't know that I have like a good funny one. Like, I've mostly just like attached them to carts or something.
Yeah,
and, like,
it's easier, isn't it, that way?
But the most violent one I did was, there was one where the guy was like down a hill and I just dropped him down the hill and I was like, will he roll? And he rolled. Yeah, he rolled all the way down. I was like, perfect. Awesome. He's right there. And then last question from AB is, I think a discussion about the respective approaches you've taken to gameplay could be interesting. Like, how did you play and where did you go after first landing in Hyrule? How did you play and where did you go after first getting the paraglider? I've been doing what I did in Breath of the Wild, playing at a pace one could only describe as leisurely, faffing around to a ridiculous extent, climbing every surface I can, and taking on every side quest I find. Love fixing those signs. TLDR, why is this game so good?
Whenever you fix a sign, by the way. Like, it's just like, he's like, how did I not think of that? Like, you put a plank of wood next to it.
Genius! Yeah, it sounds like you and I are birds of a feather there, Andrew. Like I said, I call my playstyle the crow playstyle, where when you see a shiny thing in the distance, you go engage with that shiny thing. And if you're in the middle of doing something and a different shiny thing catches your attention, whatever, man. Go up in the sky islands. Who cares? Just go where you're going to go. And what I do, anytime I see something interesting off in the distance, my first instinct, take it out, pin it
on it. Yeah.
Just in case I get distracted.
Yeah, and then I'll go back later. I've seen so many that I run out of pins. And so then, and then I've got to like delete a pin. I'm like, oh, I don't remember what that was. So I'll delete that and then come back later.
You can do the additional
pins. Yeah. Like the.
Well, I've been doing that where if it's something I'm immediately going towards, I leave it as one of the colored ones so that it's on my map. And if it's something that I'm like, oh, I'll come back to it later, I'm devising a system where there's like, there's the little person icon.
Oh my
if there's
God.
A person to talk to, I do that. If it's an area that has like a treasure that I can't get to, I have put the treasure icon. If it's like a boss or a monster that I can't kill, I put the little skull icon. If it's one of the like memories, I put the heart icon. So I've come up with kind of my own system to be able to look and be like, what was in
That's
this area
good.
That
smart.
I... It's worked out for me because when I've gotten new abilities and been like, oh, I can go tackle this thing now. It's like, great, let me go right there. You know, take it out. No problem.
So for me, I think I probably did what you did, Pete, when you first landed. I would imagine you went to Hyrule Castle, did the story, went down that route, and then got the four beacons, right? Come up with things.
As soon as I did that and got the paraglider, I was like, all right, now I'm messing around.
That's how I played it. But then I did a couple of towers. I think I did one more tower from the first one that it basically instructs you to do. And then after that, I was like, okay, I think I'm going to head towards one of the beacons. And I went to Rito. And then along the way, I saw a bunch of shrines, saw a bunch of other things. I like the new discovery sections. And you like find a cave. And you're like,
caves.
Oh, there's something cool. And I can like go in this cave. And there's like a weird rabbit thing that I've got to shoot. And it drops something. I have not found out where to take those things
yet. I just found out where to go to deal with that. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to finding out where to go because I've got like five of those at this point. And then, I was heading towards it, did that dungeon. And now I'm going to mess around a little bit. I'm on my way to Kakariko, like I said, and then I'm going to go and do the next one of those beacons that are on there, which I think are probably all of the dungeons that you've got to do.
I'm interested in how many dungeons there are. Is it just four for the big things? Are there other ones? Like I've encountered
four. I think it's four, and then one final one is probably the castle.
Okay,
would be my guess.
Because like I've encountered things in the overworld that made me think that they were dungeon-like, if not dungeons. And I've also found a bunch of these things called sage stones that seem to connect to the sages and the Temple of Time and the stuff from Ocarina and like something in the plot that I don't have enough pieces of the puzzle to understand yet, you know?
You'll get the pieces when you finish your first dungeon, I think. When you figure out what you get from them, you'll figure out what it is.
Interesting. Well, we'll see after tonight, right? But I think it's a testament to this game that I'm like 25-ish, maybe 30 hours in, and I haven't engaged with any of the main stuff at all.
Oh, yeah,
like there's people in our Discord who are like, I've already got the Master Sword. I'm done this. And I'm like,
yeah, and I don't want to. I've not really looked up anything. I'm no longer on Twitter.
I'm not looking at it.
Yeah, but like I've even managed to avoid pretty much every spoiler because I'm not on Twitter. So I'm not seeing videos. And over on Mastodon, people are posting them, but there's content warning over there. So I've just been ignoring any video that gets posted for the most part, unless I know what it is. Like some people have posted videos in Discord and they've got like a little caption as to what it's going to spoil. If you want to watch it, you can kind of make that decision.
Oh, that video that Trendy Brendy shared. Did you see that where he was gliding and then a star like fell right next to him and he just chased it down to the ground? I was like, oh, that's so cool. What a magical moment, you know?
I've not found a giant fairy yet either. I need to go find one
of
those.
I just found my first one. I found my second one, but I interacted with my first one because there's like a whole side quest associated with the fact that they're like in their bulbs and they won't come out. And
that's like, cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I like that there's so much from Breath of the Wild that feels familiar, but it's not too familiar. There's still a lot of changes that have happened, and it feels like, oh, I know this game, but then at the same time, I don't.
I made this point earlier, right, where I think this game takes such good advantage of being a sequel and being in the same place and not feeling old, because like what they do is like they play on that familiarity, right? The fact that you do know these characters, or you know these locations, they leverage them to make you feel something. You go there and, oh no, like this place that I liked and knew it's under attack or they're struggling. Like, I want to help them, or I get here and this, you know, phenomenon has happened and now it's totally different. And it's now this thing that was supposed to be familiar is foreign and alien again. And like, that's, I think it's just, it makes such good use of the fact that you've been here before and you know this stuff, and like leveraging that to surprise and delight you rather than having you just feel like, yeah, I'm back in the same map again and I'm doing new stuff.
Do you think you could come into this game having not played Breath of the Wild? I kind of feel like you could. I think you'd miss out on a bunch of backstory. But if you wanted to be, I think if you wanted to be in the moment right now, because we had Left by Lazy write in and ask a question last week about it. And I know he said on the Discord that he's probably going to pick up this game. He never finished Breath of the Wild and he's now going to buy the game.
He wrote in today and said, fuck it, I'm going to buy it as soon as I finish RE4. Do I need to buy a pro controller for this, or can I still enjoy Tears of the Kingdom as a handheld only Switch user?
I will say, great question. I am so glad I bought those Gilly Kit sticks for my drifting Joy-Con. They feel great. I've not had any issues with them.
You got to make a video about those. I want to hear about the installation process and everything a little bit.
I'm so happy I picked those up. So I would highly recommend, if you've got a drifting Joy-Con, I highly recommend go get a set of those, because they're pretty readily available now.
Yeah, I'm gonna buy some and make a video.
Yeah, let's do it.
Sarah's just started drifting. I bought her her favorite color is yellow, and I got her the arms ones that came out way back in the day, and they somehow have avoided drifting all this time. They're like one of the most OG sets that we have in our house, and she plays a lot of her Switch, and I've always just been like, fingers crossed, those yellow ones, they kick ass. And it's like, oh, shoot. It just started drifting now with Tears of the Kingdom, and it's like, this is a bad game to have drift on, right? Because there's so much minutia in like the, you know, the motion control. Oh, Steve, I'm using motion control to aim.
Are you finally converted?
Dude, I think I might be. Like, I'm like, oh, wait, okay. I get what Steve is saying now of, like, I'm using the stick and then doing the micro motions.
Just get the eye. Just quickly, just, like, tilt a little bit to get them in the eye.
I'm like, I don't know, man. I think I might be a convert over here. Pretty good.
It's about time.
To answer your question, no, you could definitely play in handheld only. It's good in handheld.
I've been playing a lot in handheld.
I've been primarily, I would say, probably spent my time docked. But honestly, it might be closer to 50-50 now, because I played it docked all day yesterday. And then when I went out to the park the other day. So like, I'm probably, if not half of my time, at least a third of my time has been handheld. And I think it's great. I think for what it's worth, if you are an OLED Switch owner like myself, God, this game looks good on that device, man. Those OLED screens, like especially in like the depths. You know, like the dark sections of the map. It's like, oof, okay, all right.
Yeah, get those bright seeds out.
And I want to talk more about performance in just a second here. But before that, let me remind you that this episode of Nintendo Noise is brought to you by our Patreon producers for the month of May. They are, of course, Arnold J. Rimmer, Christopher Valenz, Earth Visitor, Gabriel Hasselmeyer, a.k.a. Sobe, Snackago, Ty the Dude, and Waka Hula. Thank you guys so much for your support over on patreon.com/flipscreengames. Y'all are the reals to the real, and we greatly appreciate your support of this and all of our sister shows. Speaking of which, Steve and I had a great conversation on the Flip Screen Games podcast this week about kind of grading 2023 so far and talking about who's winning up to this point and who do we think is going to kind of be the publisher of the big three between Nintendo, PlayStation, and Xbox that is going to, you know, really, really capture hearts and minds by the end of the year. So if you're interested in listening to us gas up Nintendo a little bit more this week, go check it out. If you haven't checked out that show before, I think you'll enjoy it, even if you are a Nintendo only listener. So go give that one a listen. And of course, if you want to get in touch, you want to write into the show, just like all of these fine folks did for our question block. However you want to get involved, head over to flipscreen.games. That's our website where you can find links to our Discord, our email address, bunch of ways that you can get involved, share your support, keep the conversation rolling between episodes, however you choose to get involved with the community. We thank you for tuning into another episode of Nintendo Noise. So, Armo over on the Discord wrote in and said, with how amazing Tears of the Kingdom is, how much is going on in the world and how detailed stuff is. Does this have a massive negative effect towards Pokemon Scarlet Violet with the poor performance and bugs? How can both games be on the same platform yet be so different in performance? Yeah, you know, Armo, I don't think that Pokemon Scarlet and Violet needed anything to look more embarrassing. I think it did that on its own fine. And I think Xenoblade Chronicles 3 was enough to embarrass it last year. But sure. To answer your question, right? The way that these two games can be on the same platform in such a different state is speaks to what time does for a video game. This game has been in development for 6 years. Scarlet and Violet were in development for like 2, right?
I would imagine it was more than 2. It must have been at least like 3 or 4.
I mean,
because we got Arceus in between as well, and I would imagine that the team that was working on the game prior, they must have had 2 teams at that point, right?
Yeah, because
I think little... also it's got to also come down to more than that, like the
level. I mean, of I think part of it comes down to
you can put Pokemon out at that state, and they'll still sell 20 million copies like they did, and it's fine.
I mean, I think that's true, but I also think it's just like it's a difference in like production and like talent level, you know? Like, yeah. I don't think the team at Game Freak has the same level of talent as Nintendo's Zelda team.
Well, I mean, we'll find out because they're doing a game for other platforms, aren't they, with Private Division? Yeah. So
we'll see
what that looks like.
But yeah, I mean, you know, to bring it to what you said, right, Steve, Pokemon Sword and Shield came out in 2019. It had DLC that was worked on by a separate team. So if you assume that that team is the same team that then went on to make Scarlet and Violet, they had from 2019 to 2022. That's not very long.
Yeah, so we're looking at three years. I would imagine pre-production probably started before then. So it's half the time that Breath of the Wild took. But it's nowhere near as expansive, right? There's not as many systems.
No. But point being, though, right? If Scarlet and Violet had the same amount of time as this game, it wouldn't have released in the state that it did, period. You know?
Or maybe more people, because did you see what Yves Guillemot over at Ubisoft said? The number of people that are working on Assassin's Creed at the moment is? How many do you think it is? 2,000 people are working on Assassin's Creed right now.
Well, okay, you know what? Actually, though, that makes sense, because they have multiple projects in development.
And that's going to amp up to 2,800 soon. That's a lot of people working on Assassin's Creed.
Putting a lot of eggs in one basket there, huh?
Yeah. Well, they were all in the Tom Clancy basket. We've got to move them over to the Assassin's Creed basket.
I guess, right? maybe try a new game. I don't know, guys. Whatever. You know, we'll see. They have 4 or 3 Assassin's Creeds in development, right?
3 Assassin's Creeds, including the weirdo, like, game as a service
like thing. Platform that they're all gonna I don't know, we'll see how that goes. Next question, this one comes from Navalis, who writes in and said, what direction do you think Legend of Zelda takes after this game? Does it stay with the open world / building approach, or does it return to something a little more traditional with Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom elements sprinkled in? I wanted to pull some quotes from an interview with Game Informer with Eiji Aonuma, the director of both Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, and is, you know, been the leader of the Zelda team for a bit now. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read Game Informer's question, and then I'll tell you when it's AG's response, okay? And regardless of how, and this is, they're in the middle of talking about how puzzles were designed and how this game has kind of a different design approach. Regardless of how intelligently the game is designed and how creative its mechanics are implemented, these powers are so open-ended that people are inevitably going to solve puzzles and problems in ways you didn't even imagine. I know I completed several puzzles and scenarios in the game where I thought, was that the right way to do it? Or did I cheat that? What goes through your mind when you see somebody successfully complete a problem in a way you never thought of? Here's AG's response. When you think about people, cheating is fun. Hilarious way to start the answer to that. Laughs. They like it. Finding that shortcut is enjoyable. People will look for an easy way to do something if they can avoid struggling. We want to make sure that is something that stayed in this game. When thinking of games in the past that we've worked on, where there was a puzzle to solve and only one answer, that's kind of the past way of developing games. Now, I'm happy that we've arrived at this method where we're giving people lots of options, and there are many answers to a single problem, and all of them can potentially be correct. I feel happy that we've arrived at this type of development style. Going back to the interviewer. On that note, I think a lot of people share the viewpoint that Ocarina of Time was kind of the starting point for one era of Zelda games, laying the foundation for several titles that came after it. Do you see Breath of the Wild as establishing the new blueprint or foundation of the next several Zelda games for years to come? And then here's Inuma's response. With Ocarina of Time, I think it's correct to say that it did kind of create a format for a number of titles in the franchise that came after it. But in some ways, that was kind of a little bit restricting for us. While we always aim to give the player freedoms of certain kinds, there were certain things that format really didn't afford in giving people freedom. Of course, the series continued to evolve after Ocarina of Time, but I think it's also fair to say that now that we've arrived at Breath of the Wild and a new type of more open gameplay and freedom that it affords, yeah, I think it's correct to say that it has created a new kind of format for the series to proceed from.
I'm so glad to hear that. Like, I think people loved Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask and Wind Waker, and they were beloved, right? But I think by the time we got to Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, it was pretty clear that that format was maybe getting a little bit long in the tooth, and I think we were ready for a revival and it felt like you were just chasing.
That, yeah. Right? Like, it was like, we want the next Ocarina. And it's like, you can't have the next Ocarina, right? Ocarina was special because it was unique and that was what it was, right? In the same way that Breath of the Wild was special because it was different, you know? And it needs to keep evolving for sure.
Yeah. And I'm glad about that. But I will say, Link's Awakening on Switch is delightful. And I really hope we don't lose that style. I would love to see more 2D Zelda games in that style, and I'd like to see potentially two series of games in the way that there is two series of Mario games, and we get the 3D Mario games, and then we get the 2D Mario games. And as we spoke about on the Flip Screen Games podcast yesterday, the 2D Mario games have always outsold the 3D ones, and maybe that would be the case with like more traditional Zelda games that are like the top down isometric.
I don't think they would. I think they
no,
would.
No, I don't think they would.
But I think that's fine. They cost less to make and they take less time to make.
I would really love to see that.
Here's my hot take. I want to pull in some comments from folks in the community who responded to this when this article was shared. Naval has said, honestly, they shouldn't. And I don't think they can go back to the traditional style unless it's a remake or remaster of an older game. Asobi said, I think a mix of both would be nice. Breath of the Wild style levels, but as separate levels and not one big open world is what I could see happening. For the mainline games remain like Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, while spinoffs go a more classic route.
Honestly, I hated that in Pokemon. The fact that it wasn't one big world and I had to go from area to area. And I don't want that. I want one big world that I can explore and I can go around, and each area in that world feels different. You know, I can go to the Rito area and it feels different to the Gerudo area. And I think that really worked for me in Breath of the Wild, but it's one cohesive story and one cohesive world that I feel like I'm invested in and I'm a part of. And I've enjoyed that since, I would say, Oblivion on the Xbox 360, I think, was the first game I really was just like, wow, I feel like I'm a part of this world, and this is what I want moving forward from open world style games.
I think it depends. I think I like that style of open world when it is... I hate saying this. I like it when it's good, right? Because, like, I can think of a lot of open world games I've played where it's like the world itself is not interesting or exciting to traverse.
That's the problem. It's when it's not populated with enough stuff and it doesn't feel like a world. It just feels like a terrain with objects planted on top.
And that's why I think the idea of having like open areas that are segmented, I actually think works really well in certain types of games, right? I don't think that Zelda is that type of game, though, because for me, where I want that more is in games that are not about exploration, right? Like, I think of, I'll use an example from a franchise that I really like, right? Obviously, I'm a big Dragon Age fan. First two Dragon Age games are about areas, right? You go into contained areas, and this area is this map, and there are nooks and crannies for you to explore and discover, but there's also kind of like an A point and a Z point, and you know, the way that you're going to get through this section of the game is by playing through this area, right? And how you interact with what's here and what you engage with and which paths you go down, you can make those choices and those will influence your experience. But it is a largely linear experience, right? And the creativity comes in what order you go to those places. And like, do you go here first and then you get this advantage? Do you go here? Do you try to do this? Do you try to do that? Are you going to be a good guy? Are you going to be a bad guy? In that kind of game where openness and exploration and discovery are not really the point, an open world gets in the way and it makes it less engaging and less fun and less enjoyable. Look at Dragon Age Inquisition and Mass Effect Andromeda for evidence of that argument. With Zelda, that's the whole point of Zelda. So I think if you got rid of that, for me, that I think Breath of the Wild is so cool because it's actually more true to the original vision of Zelda than Ocarina or any of the stuff that came after it, right? Because it is about
it's what Link to the Past, I think, was trying to do, right? It's like go off and explore and do what you want to do, right?
Even that, I think Link to the Past is more like Ocarina than it is like the original Zelda. You know, because like it is open in that way, but there is still that dungeon progression and everything. Whereas like the original Legend of Zelda, you can do things in basically any order, right? And like there's entire things you can skip. There's entire things that you might never find. Like that is, I think, what's so cool about Breath of the Wild is the water cooler moments. And by extension, Tears of the Kingdom, right? That style is it's less about the destination. It's about the journey. Right. And what you find along the way, how you solve problems, blah, 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 blah. Whereas with Ocarina and the games that followed it, right? And that style, that's not what it's about, right? It's more of a Metroidvania. It's about you go here and you get this thing.
I was thinking yesterday was Tears of the Kingdom a Metroidvania, because there are areas that are easier to get to when you unlock skills. Like I think you can get to them without those skills, but it's definitely easier.
Where it's like in these games, you can run right to the boss and fight him and win. And that's it, right? Like you can do that. You couldn't do that in Ocarina of Time, right? You needed to go here and then go here and then go here. But before you can go here, you have to go here. And like,
but I think that's one of the things I think was a big complaint with Breath of the Wild, right? It was just like, oh, I can do it in any order. And I do think the signposting in this game has made it a lot more approachable and for people that are more familiar with those linear Zelda games where it's just like, oh, I do this, then this, then this, and this, and this, and I'm doing this dungeon, then this dungeon, then this dungeon, and I'm doing it in this specific set order. You can very much do that if you wanted to in Tears of the Kingdom. It just, you can pick which one you want to do first, but as I feel like everyone's done that I've spoken to, they've all gone to Rito Village first, they've all gone up that direction. After that one, you get told to go to another place, pretty much. It's like,
yeah,
so they
I think
are
the game
really
is trying to nudge
nudging you in the right direction. Yeah,
which doesn't force which you.
It did that in Breath of the Wild, right? Because it was like, go to Zora's Domain. That's like where we're meant to be headed first. But I ignored that and I went somewhere.
I didn't go there first. Yeah, that was like the second place I went, I think. and to take it back to Navlis's question, I think the ideal scenario in my mind is you get all of these kinds of games, right? I think like you brought up the Mario thing. Something I didn't think about with Mario really until we started working at Loot Pots, and this was something a former colleague of ours said once, that people break down Mario as there's 2D Mario and there's 3D Mario, and that's it. And that's not really true. There's two different kinds of 2D Mario and two different kinds of 3D Mario, right? There is for 3D Mario, or we'll say for 2D Mario, there's left to right side-scrolling level clear platforming, right? It's like first four games, the new Super Mario Brothers series. You start at a level, you go to the right, you finish a level. That's it. Then there's also the 2D, but that's like the 2.5D, like you said, with World, right? Where it's 2D, but it's also kind of three-dimensional, and there's the multiplayer element to it. In a lot of those, in basically all those games since the Wii, which I guess that one was 2D as well, which blurring the lines, but you get what I'm saying, right? 3D World is a different type of game. And then with the 3Ds, you have the open world style games like Mario 64 or Sunshine or Odyssey. And then you have the level clear 3D games like Galaxy, right? And I think what would be ideal would be you get all three of those in rotation, right? Where the quote unquote mainline franchise of Zelda moving forward is probably this type of game, at least for a while, right? Until it gets stale and then they got to reinvent the wheel again. Which, I mean, who's to say? Maybe that doesn't happen because it's so dynamic and whatever, whatever.
I don't know. I want to know what skills we get next. You know, it's like,
yeah,
we,
right?
It's like, we chuck these out and we start again. Like,
it's
like
another one of these every 6 years to make me feel something. That would be great. But yeah, I think, like you said, right? Like, 2D Zelda shouldn't go anywhere, right? Like, it's been a really long time since we've gotten a new one. It was Link Between Worlds, I think, was the last original one. But like you said, the Link's Awakening remake was delightful. And I think that showed that that style of gameplay is still very appealing to a lot of people, and we still want that kind of game. And also, I think that there are people who want that from the classic Zelda. They want the more traditional Metroidvania dungeon structure. And I think a lot of those folks probably feel better about Tears of the Kingdom. My closest friend that was the, like, Breath of the Wild is cool, but I don't, you know, it's not a Zelda in this way or that way, and I don't like that. He likes this game a lot better. So I wonder how many of those people maybe feel assuaged by that a little bit. But even if not,
just put the word temple after the dungeons and everyone's like, you know, everyone's like, wow, I'm on board.
But I do think that there's something to that style of gameplay, right? Like that era of Zelda, there's a lot of classics there. Depending on who you ask, those are the best ones to some people, right? Like Ocarina, Majora's, people love those. Wind Waker, people love it. Princess, yeah. Not my favorite, but people love the dungeon design, right? Like, those games have their place. And granted, I mean, maybe the way that you keep them relevant is you just keep remaking those couple games again and again and let people play them again. But I could see you getting in a world where there are three SKUs of Zelda. And there is the traditional 2D top-down, there is the traditional 3D, there is the Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom-style open world.
What about the side-scrolling Zelda 2? Where's that? We've forgotten about
it. It's everywhere. It's DNA is everywhere. You know, it's it crawls so that all these other games could run, you know.
That was just gone. It's not canon. Go away.
I've been thinking about it, Steve. I kind of want to do a series or something where I like replay every one of them, and because that's the only one I've never beaten, I think. Well, not the only one.
It's the only one I've never played.
It's definitely not the only one I've never
played. Oh, no, I've not played the 3DS one. Yeah, the Link Between Worlds. I've never played that either.
That one's really good. I didn't play the Spirit Tracks or Phantom Hourglass. And then, you know what? I've also never finished Twilight Princess because I didn't care for it. I never finished Skyward Sword. So I would love to try all of them. One. Four Swords I did beat. Yeah.
Okay.
I had, when I was growing up, I've told this story before. The Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, I bought the Game Boy adapter for that, and I used it in Sonic Adventure and Animal Crossing or whatever. So I had it already. And then when Four Swords came out, it came with another one. So I had two. So, and then I had a friend who
just
had
needed
one
two
as
more
well.
Swords.
Oh. So we only had three. It was me and him and his little brother, but we beat it. So, you know, worked out.
Yeah, three swords. That's fine.
Three Swords Adventures.
That. Yeah.
They have that one. Triforce Heroes, right? Is that what it's called? Or whatever. I didn't play that one either. But yeah, I think that would be cool. You know, I would like to see a return to that style at some point, but I would, if it was at the expense of this kind of game, I wouldn't want that because this kind of game is I think better, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I think there's something.
I mean, that's clear from the reviews, right? From the critical acclaim, I would imagine the sales figures for this kind of game is going to usurp Breath of the Wild. I mean, maybe not because that was on two platforms, but I think probably will.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of question marks there. I think it could. Its initial sales have been a lot. Like, there was a thing in the UK where it was like physical sales were like more than two times, like 2.75.
Yeah, because we've got down the curries for 45 quid, you know? Like, I'm not going to be paying 60 if it's 45 on a physical cartridge.
Yeah, I pulled the trigger on the vouchers for that reason. I was like, all right, whatever. They got me on the hook. I'm going to get at least one more game from them this year anyway. So.
Yeah, you're going to get Pikmin.
Yeah, definitely. Or Advance Wars, which I still haven't gotten to.
And don't blow on Advance. It's a cheaper title.
Is it?
Yeah, isn't that one of the cheaper ones in the UK?
I don't know. Here, we'll see. I'll have to see on that one. I do want to answer this question. We're going to have to wrap it up here in a minute. But I do want to answer this question. This one comes from Ryan Clary 6174 over on YouTube, who wrote in and said, "There are materials like wood and wheels scattered throughout the world. I've assembled cars and carts, but no way to steer them. Will I access this functionality as I progress, or am I missing something?" You will access this functionality. That is, there are steering wheels.
It's part of those capsules, right? That you can get, and you can then just like spawn one.
You'll find them scattered throughout the world too, in the same way that you find like random, you know, you might find a fan, you might find a flame emitter.
Or you can like turn them into, you can like turn things like the stone stuff that you get, right? Can you do something with that and then turn those into charges and then like put them in? That whole thing is so cool. Like going through the mines, I was like, wow, this is fucking awesome.
Yeah. There's a lot to that system I still haven't figured out. There's like an,
there's like the solid state things as well. Like you can either do into charges or you can do into like the solid crystals.
You can pop the crystals on and they'll power stuff too and things like that. I'll say this. If you go into the underground, you'll find schematics for things that you can build as well. And there is a power that you'll unlock only by going underground. I haven't gotten it yet, but I've heard about it. It's auto build basically, where there are certain things you can just make that way.
We need auto cook next. That's what I want. Auto cook.
I hate how long it takes to cook. I'm
me too.
I'll sit and do it for like 20 minutes just so I don't have to do it again.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But there's more stuff that you can put in now, right? Have you made something that makes you glow yet? I was like, oh shit.
I did that for the underground.
And I go underground. I was shooting those arrows with the things with the bright stone on like a sucker, and I was like, I can just glow. Well, I don't need this. Just make me radioactive. But like Mr. Burns in that Simpsons episode.
Yes, absolutely. All right. So I do want to close this out. We got a comment from one of our listeners, Sierra, who wrote in and said, "Let it be known that the resident Tears of the Kingdom cynic and skeptic is enjoying the game. Thumbs up. I'm enjoying all the abilities more than I thought, especially fusing weapons. Probably the highlight of the game for me so far. Great way to use up materials and solve the big problem for me from Breath of the Wild. Still not a huge fan of Ultra Hand, but it's the main new thing, so I guess it's going to have some problems." I am of the opinion that Ultra Hand clicks the longer you use it.
Rotation sucks, though.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, so annoying. You have to have it face on looking at you straight.
And then
do the vertical.
Yeah.
And then do the light horizontal. It's so annoying.
It's fiddly.
Yeah.
But I think for me, and I've seen this echoed through a lot of the reviews for like people that have completed the game, right? Is that like your first couple hours with it, it's really like, what the hell? Like, I'm fighting against these controls. I feel like I've personally crossed a Me point too. 25 hours in where now I don't think about it that way because I know what I need to do, and the like getting it straight on and rotating it and doing what I want it to do feels more like second nature to me now. So I don't find myself struggling against it as much anymore. So I don't know. I don't know how far in you are, Sierra. So maybe you're that far in and it's still, you're still finding it fiddly, and you know that your mileage may vary. But I wonder if you might feel differently about it, you know, another 5-10 hours in when you've built 100+ things from where you are now. Because I find that it's getting easier and easier for me. Not a fan of shrines being back, but I'm glad there's more time to fill out your hearts and stam wheel better. I'm glad there's more this time. Really loving the environmental puzzles and the sky islands. I love shrines. I've never understood the hate for them. But I know that's not an opinion only you share.
Yeah. I think people saw them as a replacement for traditional dungeons in Breath of the Wild. And we didn't really, because the beasts were okay, but I think we get both in this game, and I like that. And I like that there's a good variety of shrines. There's some puzzle ones. There's always been the combat ones, and now there's the ones where you got to build contraptions as well. And I also like that.
I forget what they're called. But you know, there's that island in the first game where you go and they take all your gear away, and you have to like fight naked. Have you seen any of those? Like, those are a type of shrine now, or like it's just a puzzle where you are naked and you just get like a weapon.
Yeah. You get like I've done a couple of them. They're the combat ones I was talking about. Yeah. Like, you, it's like you, and it might be that you've got to fight them in a specific way. Like, you can only beat this shrine if you throw weapons at people, and we'll give you a bunch of weapons that can throw.
So I'm not even talking about those, because those are like the combat, like, training where they're teaching you like the mechanics. There's another set of them where you get dropped in, they take all your gear and all your stuff away. All you have is your abilities and then whatever items they give you in the intro of the
there's like a combination of, but I've had ones where it's been a combination of them where it's, I've, you know, it wouldn't let me progress until I threw, and then I could go through to the next area, but it was only with the weapons that they gave me in the beginning. They're like on sort of like a rack on the right hand side, and it's here, you've got these three items and that's all you've got, so like, good luck.
I had one of the funnest moments I've had so far was doing one of those where it was like, okay, I'm dropped in and you're in this room and you get like a club, a spear, and a shield, and then there the entire room is like, there's all these little rafts that are like multi-layered and they have the constructs on them and they're like going in a circle, and like there's an outward circle, an inward circle, and then in the center there's one of the big boss ones that can fuse items, and like they're alternating where two of them have electric, two of them have ice arrows, and they're constantly firing at you, and you need to get in and then like go around the room and like work your way into the center and take them out, because you need to kill every single one of them to advance and complete the space. I really like those like boss rush style.
Me too.
Fights, you know, and doing it in that context where they take all your abilities away and it's like, all right, like get in here and solve the combat puzzle. So satisfying. Like I think a lot of the shrines in this have been really well thought out, whether it's like you said, where they're teaching you a new mechanic, or it is just like, hey, here's like a cool challenge for you, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of them feel like they have more traditional dungeon design too, because there are a lot that are like multi-chamber in a way that is interesting. I had one recently where like I got to the end of it and I was like, I still don't even know what the objective is. Like, what am I doing in here? And
I love that the titles still give you a clue as well as to what you've got to do, which has always been good.
Overall, it feels like a big improvement from Breath of the Wild, and I'm appreciating all the quality of life updates. Had we not experienced Breath of the Wild before, I think Tears of the Kingdom would have been that much more impressive, especially considering it was fully developed for the Switch, unlike Breath of the Wild. This feels like the game we deserved in the first place. Still haven't even completed one main dungeon and have lots to experience in this game, but it feels great to be back in Hyrule in any capacity, and I'm enjoying it for what it is.
Ah, good. I'm glad that Sierra's enjoying it, because I know that she made the comment, I think it was on Twitter, about it looking like DLC for Breath of the Wild after some of those initial previews. So it's good to hear that even if people thought that potentially there's a game in there for them.
Yeah, I think I could imagine being concerned about that when we didn't know anything, but I can't imagine having experienced as much of it as I've experienced now and thinking that it was that. You know, it's so fundamentally different in a lot of ways, and it meaningfully built on everything that was there, you know. It's funny, I've heard other people say that. I don't agree that it's like this is what it should have been. I think I definitely understand the take that game felt like practice for this game in terms of like really fully realizing the depth of the physics.
Well, even when you consider stuff like all the choo-choo jellies that were in Breath of the Wild, the fact that, you know, now you can combine those with arrows and actually do something meaningful with them. It always felt like I should be able to craft arrows in that game, but I was never able to. It was very strange. I like the fact that we've got a different set of skills. That game felt very special to me. It will always be really special to me. I had such a good time with Breath of the Wild, and Tears of the Kingdom just expands upon that in every way, and I'm really, really having a good time with it.
I am too. And I think I'll leave it here, where I think the thing I'm most excited by with the game is that the more I'm playing it, the more I'm enjoying it. And I am very much in the way that you're like, I don't know if this game can ever hit the way that game did. I'm constantly assessing with myself. I'm like, do I like this game better? Like, is this a definitively better experience? Because I think it is. I think aside from the ineffable novelty of playing Breath of the Wild for the first time and not knowing what it would be, and then having that experience and getting wrapped up in those emotions connected to it. That is what it is, right? You can't replicate certain things like that. But if you remove that from the equation, like, it really does just feel like an improvement across the board. And like, I am more engaged in the story. I do feel more emotionally connected to what's going on. The stakes feel more real because I've been here and I know these places and these people and I want them to be happy and all that stuff, right? Like, it feels like they took all of the magic and fun and sense of wonder and discovery that I enjoyed about Breath of the Wild and then added a ton of new, really well realized systems and gave it an emotional core that I can connect with. So, like,
quality of life improvements across the board, which really cannot be, like, I think, minimized, because they do make playing the game a lot more enjoyable. I think like I've said multiple times, I think the signposting throughout the game is a massive step forward from Breath of the Wild. Like, there was many times I was lost. I would go back to the game and I wasn't really sure what I was meant to be doing in Breath of the Wild, and I've not had that in Tears of the Kingdom yet. So yeah, I would agree with everything you said. I think moving forwards, people are going to look back fondly on Tears of the Kingdom and see that it was an improvement in every way on Breath of the Wild.
I think the thing I love about it too, though, is I don't think it makes Breath of the Wild a game that's not worth playing, because different. They're such different experiences. It's not like it's the sequel that improved on everything. Why would you go back to the first one? And that was the other thing I was a little afraid of. And I don't think that's a problem here. I love the game. It's my front runner for game of the year as of right now. And I'm excited to talk more about it in the weeks and months to come. I think this is, like we said, it's something really special. And it's cool to see everybody, you know, who wrote in having so much fun with it, finding the fun. Even, you know, those who went in with trepidation, right, being able to be like, yeah, right, like, there's something here, you know. That's a great feeling. That's a great place to be. So Thank you for everybody who wrote in. Thanks for being part of this episode. It feels like this episode's been the entirety of our broadcast career and friendship in the making, Steve. I can't believe it's finally here, but here we are. What a time to be alive.
Yeah, right, let's go play some more Zelda.
Let's go play some more Zelda, everybody. So if you guys want to write in to the show for next week's conversation, that will probably be about Tears of the Kingdom some more, make sure you write in to us, questions@flipscreen.games. Come and join the Discord and keep the conversation rolling between episodes. However you want to get involved, head over to flipscreen.games. That's our website where you can become a part of the community, write in the show, go become a Patreon supporter, get early access. Whatever you want to do, however you want to get involved and share your support, we greatly appreciate you tuning into another episode of Nintendo Noise. For the crew, I've been Pete. He's been Steve. We'll see you next week. Keep on building.